welcome to the Standing Committee on Community Safety. This afternoon we will be looking at the budget appropriation for vote for Department of Community Safety. It is the very last budget that our committee will be dealing with in this term, so we have a responsibility to ensure that the budget that we leave to the next term is a stable budget, and we look forward to very robust and free conversations with the department this afternoon. A very warm welcome to Minister Windies, to Mr. Morris, and the Community Safety Department team, as well as members from the Western Cape Liquor Authority and the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, as well as officials from other departments. I will afford you all an opportunity to introduce yourselves for the Hansard. My name is Mireille Wengen. I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee. To my left is our very capable Mr. Matthews, our coordinator, and to his left is Marianne Burgess, who will be assisting with logistics. I'll ask members to introduce themselves for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair. Daylan Mitchell.
Good afternoon, Chair. Lorraine Poitin, Standing Information Committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Pat Lekker.
Good afternoon, my name is Ruth Dijan.
Good afternoon, Phil and Christians.
Minister, would you like to introduce your team?
Thank you very much. I'll do exactly the same thing. Alan Wendy, MC.
Gideon Morris, Head of Department.
Good afternoon, Yashina Pillay, Chief Director, Secretariat of Safety and Security.
Good afternoon,
Private
Noble Finance.
Simeon David Kutsier, Acting Chief Director, Security Risk Management.
Simeon George, Acting CEO for the Western Cape Liquor Authority.
Maria Fox, Accountant CFO to the Western Cape Liquor Authority.
Good afternoon, Trevor Windrow, Director, Safety Promotion and Partnerships.
Good afternoon, Clarissa Samuel, Finance.
Good afternoon, Ansaf Mohammed, Director of Strategic Services and Communications.
Good afternoon, Noran Khalat, Strategic Services and Communication.
Chair, you might notice that Mr. Wingrove, this is his first time here, because he has just received the promotion.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Then we have members in the back of the room. If you'd introduce yourselves, please.
Lucas Francois, Provincial Treasury.
Provincial Treasury.
And you, sir?
Oh, hi. Damien Jacobs from PMG.
PMG. Hi.
And Nadia Arby from the Amos.
Central Amos. Right. We have an apology from Honorable Kibido. Are there any other apologies? We don't appear to have members of the public here, but of course they are most welcome, and we will allow members of the public the opportunity to pose questions once we have completed deliberating on the budget and the review book. Members, we will be dealing substantially with the blue book starting on page 125, but that can be read in conjunction with the APPs if you have questions on that as well. But before we get into page-by-page review of the budget, I'd like to ask Minister to give an overview.
Thank you very much. Obviously, as you all know, that I've only been in this position since the 1st of November, and it's been an interesting short while with this department, but the department does some really amazing things. I shouldn't abuse this space, but I mean, today we engaged with the NGOs and the religious fraternity who run the programs, or the holiday programs, so we have children safe on the streets, specifically in the hotspot areas. And it's really great to see the report back and see the kind of work that's happening on the ground, keeping people safe, because this department's job is community safety. And of course, I may be disrupting a little bit, but I want to even push it even harder. But that doesn't show really in this budget, other than perhaps a slight increase in the budget itself. You will see that that's the increase really marked for 127. But really about how do we set this department's role that it has to play within provincial government, but actually across the whole of society in trying to create an environment that becomes safer every single day. We need to move towards far safer society. Society at the moment in our province specifically is under severe threat. our job is an oversight job, but I think also we are learning through whether it's the Khayelitsha Commission, through our own legislation and the day-to-day work that we do, that this department is becoming more and more relevant in being that catalyst, being that energizer to let everyone know that it's everyone's job, no matter which department you're in, to actually help us get to a safer society. And you'll see there on page 127 with the budget decisions and the stuff that we dealt through with the adjustments budget, but you'll see it carrying through from the K9 unit, looking at highway patrol, enabling neighborhood watches. There's a whole range of things that we're already doing within this budget, trying to push boundaries, take it further, but it really is about creating a safe society. And the team have put together the budget now, looking forward again for this next year, and that's what we'll deal with, page by page, and of course if you do need to go into the NDPs. I'm sure for HND you want to add to that.
Chair, thank you kindly. Maybe just to add some of the figures Minister was speaking to. So, of course, the jump in our budget for this year would be 42 million, and then 33 million in the next year, and 21 million then after. So it's almost a 100 million rand additional injection in the baseline compared to last year over the next 3 years. So yeah, I think that's in, and we'll gladly take the question.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, MPs. Members, if you'd like to pose some questions on the introductions, as well as the overview and the review, which in the blue box goes from page 125 to page 130. Honourable Mitchell, let's start with you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the introductions by the Minister and the HOD. Chair, I want to focus on the Youth Safety and Religious Partnerships. Conjunction, I just opened the media statement by the Minister. And as the department would know, I'm going to the Central Karoo with regards to that. I just want to understand, when you, with regards to the particular, the selection of these of these NGOs and partnerships, was there any applications from the Central Karoo? I know in previous years there was an active, I mean it was advertised in the Courier, Trudy must help me if I'm misleading, but I think it was advertised in the Courier, so there was an active focus on the Central Karoo. Because it's interesting to note that, for example, in I think it's Dijsselsdorp and the Rust that is being funded for this year, but it's like 3-4 kilometers apart from the two communities. I just don't understand how that happens. That's the one thing on the partnerships. And then, Chair, just to the Minister, and he's forward on page 2 of the APP, said that the 5 million rand for the police reservists are still available, and it's available immediately. Is that because the offer hasn't been taken up by the national minister? Are they just not interested in the contribution by the Western Cape government to fulfill that function? And then just lastly, Chair, with regards to the Chrysalis Academy, which is also very a very successful program, and it goes beyond just creating a safe space. It creates a holistic young person that will contribute to the economy at the end of that journey. Is there any sort of long-term planning to perhaps expand it into more other areas in the province? Because currently it's only the young people get brought to the academy here. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Professor.
Thanks, Chair. I am latching onto the Chrysalis, and I must say, I think that is one of the flagship programs of this department, and well done for it. And I have had the privilege of attending the graduation of the girls last year, and I must say that very well done, and I know 8 of those girls were taken up in the municipality of Bergrivier, so well done to for that. And then I want to talk about the religious partnerships and ask HOD Minister, are we really getting value for money with regards to those programs? And in your own evaluation, what is the lessons learned of what has not worked within that program pertaining to the communities? And in terms of those organizations, the religious organizations that does the programs in the communities, do they really do what they are supposed to do with, you know, to bring out the added value with regards to the program? And speak to the challenges around that and the successes and how the department foresees to even better this program to become the another flagship program at the Chrysalis project. Thanks.
Honourable Lekka. And what's the plan of family? Done as an opening remark by the MEC. Particularly if you're looking at the 5 million rands, which is reserved for the appointment of the reservist. And my first question therefore would be, does the MEC understand the implication of this 5 million rands? How many reservists is the MEC and the department planning to be appointed in relation to this 5 million? Will it be able to cover the reservists on a year-to-year basis? In that regard, and I want to check, will this be an operation that will continue, or it's just for the purposes of the election, seeing that we're going to the national elections? Also, talking to the issue of the religious fraternities, I'm also going to ask once again whether the department has conducted an impact study on the monies that are used for the services that are rendered on the holiday program. Because this is not the first question that I have asked today about this religious partnership. What is the benefit of it to the community? And as and when those youngsters are kept in some building for that particular day, who takes care of them when they walk to and from that activity itself? Do we have people that ensure that those children are safe? And if you go to the bill book on page 125, Chapman, if you're reading the very first sentence on the vision of the department, it says about towards a safer, resilient communities. And I wish I could understand, when you're unpacking this definition, resilient communities, you're obviously talking of communities that are able to provide for themselves, communities that are given instruments that will enable them to live a better life. And if you're looking at this, Chairperson, I would like to check if at any point with the vision of a community that is resilient, people have an income or they have income opportunities to reduce the inequalities. Opportunities that will make sound people that are able to have self-confidence. People out there feel unworthy because they don't have a space to compete in the economy. Is the department in a position to ensure that we unpack the word resilience and ensure that people are able to sustain themselves? And if you go to a definition of safer Chairperson, I'm not sure, out of the best practices that the department has put, are there instances where we can say people are able to sustain themselves? That I want to believe that the communities are safe, the spaces out there are safe. And so, Chairperson, I would really want to understand, in terms of the investments that are done to the partnerships that the department has with various communities, with various organizations, what exactly is in the plate, or what can the department benefit on? And with that, Chairperson, is the department able to ensure that communities out there can be able to ensure that the quality of the life they live in is not comparable to others, but it looks as the same, and that they don't go through different conditions while others are benefiting more better than them? I think you should.
Wonderful questions.
Chair, I remember we had a presentation by the department on these religious organizations. We asked a couple of questions on that, because the money that's given is very little. And we said, because all it does, it takes the children off the street, but there's nothing actually, no programs that, we spoke about programs in these groups. So it said the money was very little money, so there's not much they can do. I think it's 50 rand per child just for a meal, and I think the organization must then have two meals. But we wanted to know more, you know, is there some development in those? And at that time there was nothing, so I just want to hear about that. And the other thing is, with the neighborhood watches that's vetted 13,978, if I remember correctly, last year the previous minister said that they're looking at about 19,000-20,000 at December. So why do we still have 13,900 and not close to the 20,000? Because I think the comparison we made, it will be about the same as the South African Police Service, 19,000-20,000, about there. So what is the problem there? Is there a problem there? And why is it only on 13,978? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine was uncovered by the others, because this was talking about this youth religious network. But I also wanted to know who is monitoring those projects of youth. And then secondly, as we remember, Lekar is also talking about the impact. I also want to know their impact from the youth. What is the department also or expertise for that religious youth? Are those expertise really done? Is there any impact on that issue? And then my other issue is on the issue of MEC. I see here also on page 130, you are talking about the Western Cape Provincial Parliament hosted 14 public hearings, and then you said that those plans were to develop and identify and mitigate possible risks. Now my question is on the APP. APP page 65 plus Blue Book 130. I wanted to know the risk which you are talking about on 130 are also those risks which are on the page 65. Or are we saying that there are another risk which were identified by the community in those public meetings? If they are not part of this, what are the measures for those risks which were identified by the community? I thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
I'll start to answer some of them, and then maybe Tini and the team continue. I think when it comes down to the detail of the Karoo and the application
for these projects. I'm not sure we've got exactly all that detail with us, but we can actually give that to you. That's Honourable Mitchell's question, also moving to the 5 million. So the 5 million was made up of an amount of money in a raft of different options that were put to the National Minister in a letter that we sent to the National Minister from the Premier in October. And this comes from us saying, number one is we know that we have insufficient resources, 4,500 policemen and women, too few in our province. And of course, it takes 18 months to train up a new police officer. It can't be fixed quickly, but crime needs to be dealt with. And so what are the other options that we can put on the table? So we put a raft of issues and opportunity that we saw where we could help to make a difference. This is one of them. It's actually money that comes from savings, extra funding actually through the liquor board. And in discussion, if you go to any police station and you speak to any station commander, it is the thing that comes up, or a CPF or a neighborhood watch, how do we get extra resource into the system? We need more help into the system. And I also, when I visit police stations, the station commanders say, well, what's happening with this? Because it is one of the blockages where there was a change in rules around reservists, first of all, which diminished the number available, but then there's always this, the first part of a reservist is obviously volunteer, but then there's a stipend that comes after that volunteer time. And I mean, it's only fair that that stipend is made available. The problem with this is it has to be given to the National Minister because it goes into the system because it's got to be, you know, it's per cell numbers and it's processed. We can't pay it out from the province. So we've made the money available and we still haven't had any take up on that money as yet. Every 3 weeks I resend the letter again to say, please, you know, we're making this offer. And it's not only this offer, it's a whole range. We've got a volunteer program of where we're saying how do we get our 84,000 staff who work for the provincial government to say, let's get some of our own volunteerism going. We've started a project within, and the same thing, we're happy to do this to relieve admin processes and admin in police stations so that men and women in blue can get out there and fight crime. And we haven't had an answer on that either. But we still go ahead with some of these things, so we've started that process already ourselves, and volunteers from the department have done it with docs first. And quite amazing, we went and set up outside Cape Town Central, spoke to the station commander, set up, and we now, in the first 9 days, we handled about 1,670 people that we'd helped. And people expect we spend 4 hours in a queue and then we're dealt with quickly. It was efficient. You saw smiles on people's faces. You know, they're applying for the university or a job or whatever, and they're getting commission of oaths, and it really works well. And now we're busy looking at rolling it out now to some of the hotspot stations. So we've written again to say, could we have a space in the station, especially in a hotspot station? You don't want to be outside in a kiosk, but we'll see how that goes. We haven't had an answer back on that. But so the answer to the 5 million is we still haven't had an answer back. And we can't spend it. We have to make it available to the National Department. The Chrysalis Academy, expanding the program. I mean, we are trying to expand the program across South Africa because the HOD he had his fellow HODs from a number of other provinces at that same graduation Bota was out with a whole lot of young women graduating, and they came to see because it's something that people want to look at expanding. You know, it's difficult to say yes because it would be lovely to have this program all over the province, but it's something that we've got to look at. If you speak to Professor Pinnock, who's one of the board members, he's saying we've got to have some kind of rite of passage specifically for young boys. You know, in traditions, and I suppose specifically in the Isikosa tradition, you've got a process where you become a man. You've got it in other religious spaces, but there are a lot of our young boys don't become men through a process. And how do we? This is a transition plan. How do we? So these are the questions we've got to grapple with going forward. But they're not fixed in plans or budgets yet. But I mean, I agree with you. It's something that we should look at. Because it definitely gives an opportunity for a young person to become a much more holistic person, and it is an amazing program.
The Honourable Boerter, again on the religious partnerships, the oversight. I don't know the exact number. I remember it being reported on this morning, but I think it's sort of like 80 or 90% of the projects get visited, and they get visited randomly. They don't know that they're going to get visited while the program is running. And the police captain actually spoke today at the event, who is one of the those charged. So it's not as if we are visiting our own program. We've also got people from the police services out there visiting the program as well. And it's really interesting listening to the report that he makes on these programs and making some great suggestions. And perhaps that's when it goes not only oversight, but what it actually delivers. And it's whether it's the Honourable Buddha's question or the Honourable Christian's question. So what do the projects actually deliver? So what I saw today was I saw on the one side robotics, which is quite amazing. You actually build up Lego robots from robots that play soccer to, it's quite amazing the kind of stuff that gets planted through this program, to arts, crafts, to games, to actually out camp, you know, it's not necessarily only in a church hall or in a community hall. Some of these programs actually take children and they go out to a camp space where they go and do, you know, I suppose fitness and technical stuff that they work on, but they actually take them away to places. And so we have, and obviously these programs make application. And they, it's not as if we dictate to them what they must do. They come up with these plans of what they are going to do, and then it goes through the process. But really, and I would advise, this is the last, we're not going to have another one like today until after the election, I think. I heard the people saying about you, the next one. But really, it would be good to go and have a look, because you can actually see the report backs on what the programs are delivering. And of course, remember that this is a, you know, it's a small budget. It's actually a prevention budget. You know, a lot of policing is about policing and the criminal justice system and, you know, dealing with crime at that level. But in actual fact, these kind of programs are not only keeping young kids safe during, you know, hot spot during a holiday season, keeping people busy doing things. It's also how do we actually inculcate whole different mindset on safety. So it's about prevention, keeping young people away from drugs or gangs or whatever. Then Honourable Lekker, I think also the review of the actual program itself. Today when I saw it, I think the department also speak about the process of the actual review. Impact study, and the actual results, so we can measure. Because of course, if you can't measure, you can't manage. And what I've just spoken about is obviously me seeing it, but we can report back on the actual process. I'll if we talk about safer. This one woman spoke today about she's got her own 4 children, but now suddenly she feels through this process she's got 1,000 children. It really was amazing to see how the ownership of this program, and so it was really great to be part of. The issues raised by the Honourable Lekker, you know, this is a complex space that we are working in, and she asks the question whether these projects are put in place because of an election. And I'm going to say to her, definitely not. We have to make sure that we build a safer society. Out there, it is really, really difficult. You know, every single day in this province, 10 people are murdered. 10 people are murdered every day. And we just have to then narrow that down to the crime hotspots where, you know, every day a family burying a few of their sons or their mothers, or as in just the other day, 2 days ago, a 4-year-old child. I mean, absolute innocence if ever there was, and we have to make a difference. We have to change this. It cannot be the future. And so, yeah, it could be these kind of projects, but it is also about the much bigger stuff that we're able to do within an oversight and a small budget that this department has. It would be nice to be spending 2 or 3 billion rand, as we can see in other spaces, but we don't have that kind of money. We don't have that kind of mandate, but of course we will also push those boundaries as much as we can, and I think in time, I think we've got to push those boundaries even more, because quite frankly, it has to change. Societies are under severe, severe, severe pressure. I think the Honourable Christian is also the same thing about those programs. I mean, I think I said enough of this, we'll get some detail coming through. The last point on the vetting, and this number changes because, of course, when you're registered, Neighbourhood Watch, these are volunteers, people come and go. I also say 17,000, when's it 18,000, and then have a look again and it's dropped a bit because maybe some of the volunteers have dropped off the system. But that registration is continuing. We can actually probably give more detailed figures now of how many we're at now, 130, not sure, but we'll get that when it goes down the road. I've mentioned the 80% to 90% of this project that's being monitored. And I think that's enough for me. I'm not sure if you've got anything to add to those, and then maybe we'll get some detail in some of the report.
Minister, thank you. Minister, let me also just speak to some of the questions. So, Honourable Member Mitchell, on the selection process, the advert is now out, calling for applications. It's open until the 22nd of March. We have earmarked 40% of the available money for rural areas and 60% for the urban areas. And we then have a panel that's made up of both community safety as well as the police. And we also invite some of the functional CPMs to contribute. And that panel then makes a recommendation to the accounting officer for approval. I think it's also important to mention that when you look at the budget allocated for the program, last year 4.2 million, this year 6.2, next year 7.4. So it's really going in a direction in where we want to expand it. The questions of the impact study, we had as part of the management performance assessment tool as adjudicated by the presidency, we had this program evaluated last year. We had then compiled an improvement plan on some of the findings pertaining to logistics like time use payment and so on. And this morning again, I'm sure Minister will attest that those things have now been sorted. I think it's as Mr. Christian, also Honourable Member Christian, said about the impact. We increase the amount from 50 rand to 65 rand. Of course, that's still not enough. But now you understand that's always a limitation, and we do recognise that this is not supposed to be a DOCS-funded program. It's actually us amplifying the work that the churches are already doing. So it's actually a matching, because some of the members spoke this morning about the money that they put into the program, and I think that's what we want to continue. In the meantime, with the additional funds available, it is about the improvement of the program. And again, the message very clearly is now we are focusing on youth, but the partnership with the religious fraternity actually creates a platform for many other issues also to be dealt with in terms of safety and related issues. On the reservists, maybe just Ms. Lacker asked specific questions on the, ma'am, the stipend paid by reservists is actually prescribed by police at a national basis. We have 850 plus minus active reservists in the province currently, and what happens over the festive season, as I'm sure you know, is that the Police National will make a budget available to call up the reservists for specific periods of time. They're not paid all the time, but they do get paid when they are called up for specific duties. And what we said with this 5 million is then to allow for the call up of the police reservists in those 10 murder stations. Let's then see if we can do that. But the stipend is, if I remember correctly, because they work on rank, and remember the reservists can be from a constable to a colonel, but the highest that they pay is about 850 rand a day. And that stipend would not then have paid all 850, but we worked out a detailed business plan with them on the deployment of the reservists. I think I'll ask Advocate Belay on some of the, also to add on the YSRP, maybe on the chrysalis, if I can just on the long-term planning, remind the committee that last year, with funding given by community safety, we now have a fully accredited program. So chrysalis is now fully CSETA accredited, which allows us to break it into modules and start piloting some modules in different areas. Ms. Buerta will also note that on page 155, we have increased the EPWP payment so that we can make sure that all those youngsters are then taken up, as in your case, placed in the municipality. We must honestly say, and I say this, the placement of the youngsters is still a area, because we want to make sure that there's opportunity for them for employment afterwards. So when we place them, for instance, with the city improvement districts or so, the take up on permanent employment is about 70%. But when we place them with municipalities, and so a year later the municipality will write the motivation for us to extend, then we'll extend on the condition that they will where they'll either train or employ, but we're not there as we want to be. And I think the additional money made available for us to negotiate a safety plan with the municipalities will then make sure that some of that money can then maybe go on in order to pay for that. I think then just on the issue of the neighborhood, what the minister has already answered, the YSRP who monitors, that's also, ma'am, as minister said, the honorable member Diana, it's the police, and it's ourselves, and it's well also CPS members. It's unannounced visits. There's a detailed record, ma'am. We can give you a full report of all the visits that we've done. We also break the payment into two parts. 80% is paid up front. The other 20% is then kept until we then have done the visit and we're happy. And if you haven't performed this year, you don't qualify next year. So that vetting process is honestly dealt with very carefully. The security risk that you spoke about, what we're saying, you may recall that 2 years ago we created the security support team. Those are 20 provincial security officers that we withdrew from points, and they are now on a rotation helping with security at some of the schools, at the hospitals when it's needed. And one of the functions is we've signed an MOU with the Secretariat of Provincial Parliament, is that when you have when there are public hearings of the legislature in the community, we go, we do a security risk assessment of the venue, and we then provide security support at the event itself, and that's what this document speaks to. So the risk in the APP is not the same as here. For every site that we visit, we do a full security risk analysis. I think, Chair, we have answered. And then, colleagues, is there anything you want to add? I guess, yeah.
Thank you, HOD. Just to add that the closing date for the current applications is the 22nd of March. We have sent communique to the Standing Committee, and so we are hopeful that the members do encourage the religious organizations in the Central Karoo and elsewhere to also apply.
Okay. maybe I'm just sorry, but for the question of Honourable Member Christians, I think also on the numbers of the CPA of the neighbourhood watches, ministers answered. But you may also recall, sir, that last year we introduced a funding model to neighbourhood watches. And the funding model will have two phases to it. The first funding model, which we have now paid out 135 neighborhood watches, have been paid an amount of 10,000 rand, and that's the first funding then for in order to ensure functionality, which include then, because they now have cost to register their members, to have, you understand, to keep record of it and to be able to send the information, data and so forth, and that money is then covering that. We also have, Chair, remember when I was here last time, we presented to you on an Excel spreadsheet, and that is now electronically. So we have an electronic register of all the neighborhood watches, of all the members, that is now on the web. It's no longer an Excel spreadsheet. And that gives us then an accurate database from where we can then mobilize. And we have gone in advanced conversations, for instance, with Department of Education, where they want to work with neighborhood watchers on safety at their schools. We've piloted it in Atlantis and in some of the other areas as well.
Members, are there any follow-up questions on that and the overview and review up to page 130?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the MEC made mention of the different options that they have put to the National Minister of Health, and I think it's only fair that we perhaps at some other time or in a form of a document be provided with the kind of communication that says these are the options that we put up front to the department. And the second part, Chair, of my follow-up would be the, we were once told that the graduates, some of the graduates from the Chrysalis Academy will be deployed to the CPFs that are kind of struggling to complete the EPPs and all of that. And I would like to know how many of those graduates have been placed to those CPFs and which CPFs are those. Another follow-up, Chair, is around the issue of an oversight over law enforcement agents. This is our last year here. At the beginning, I asked if the department has any relationship with the city of Cape Town, and I made a special place, made mention of the special place, a space that is opposite two schools in Nyanga, Iliwa Primary and Oskambeta High Schools. There's a chop shop there. And the city officials do not seem to be responding to the calls by the CPF to close the chop shop because it's illegal. It's even blocking the route. You might rather take another turn because you won't be able to turn into that road. That matter has been raised several times. Nothing has been done about it. And I'm going to ask again, what sort of decisions are carried through by the department, the MEC, to relevant people which were raised in this venue? And the second part key to that, Chair, would be, if you're looking at the EPP of Nyanga specifically, the issue of the Orchard Square robots, where there's smash and grabs, people are killed, robbed on that specific robot. What are the plans in place besides putting up a subs van during peak hours? What else can be done? Because if you're looking at the camera that is there, it's not even focusing on the side of Nyanga, but rather focusing on the N2 and towards Bellevue Industrial. So to me, it raises many concerns, that the only concern that is there is for people that are going to town and people that are using Bellevue as a business hub. And I want to know what is done about it, because the chop shop has been in existence for 20 years, plus minus 20 years, because I was a student back then in 1993. That was my last year. in that high school, and that chop shop was there. If you're looking at the butcher's quarry, it was there for the past 5 years, and nothing has been done about it. So I'm really worried, because it looks like the bylaw enforcement does not take place in our communities. So what's the process? Is there certain areas disregarded while other areas are taken care of? And going back, Chair, to the issue of the partnerships. If you're looking at the issue of the partnership, there's this thing of the EPP, and there's this thing of compliance by the CPFs. If they're not compliant, they're not submitting the EPP, they must pay back the money. Does the department take into account that most of the CPFs do not have time to complete the EPP, and therefore those administrators that were supposed to be placed in those CPFs are supposed to play a role, rather than leaving them there because they are able to use the technology? Because now CPFs are instructed to return back the 2,500 that was paid to those CPFs. And it's not about compiling the EPP, but it's about making sure that the partnership with the CPFs is a fruitful partnership, is a partnership that the department can engage on. Because if you're looking at the issue of Nyanga, the partnership does not serve any good purpose. One would be the chop shop that has been in existence for 20 years. The second one is the butcher's quarry robots that nobody takes care of. Now, Chairperson, it means there's no partnership per se. It's a matter of saying, I give you money and therefore you must do the job, regardless of the conditions that you're working in. And Chair, I'm really interested in knowing the issue of optimizing our security. The related resources that we're using, how best can we make sure that we use those resources optimally? Because in my view, if you give people 50 rand for food, your religious fraternity, and you're expecting them not only to keep those young ones outside of danger, but there must be something that those young ones benefit from, that they become resilient enough. What is 50 rand for? Is it really about the 50 rand that you're giving them, or is it about putting in a morale that will make them feel that they are no longer vulnerable, and hence the department will be able to effectively ensure that its mandate is carried through? Because the department is all about ensuring that people are resilient and making sure that it's an opportunity where everyone enjoys safety. That is a whole of society approach. Now, if it's a whole of society approach, but there are little things that are not tied together, it really doesn't make sense to me. Hence, I'm very much concerned about those outcomes that we might be getting as a department. And to me, it shouldn't be about ticking boxes. It should be about ensuring that we do what we can. The issue of the impact study, which I raised here, it's something that we're told it has not been commissioned, and as and when it's done, we're going to be informed of. And surprisingly enough, there's been some work around it, but we're not told as the committee. So I'm not sure exactly who's keeping what from who. Or are we taken into confidence about the activities of the department, and there are certain activities that we're not supposed to know of? I thank you, Chair.
Are there any other final questions on these sections?
Just that amount of, I'm just looking for that amount of 10,000 rand, is that annually? And then what is the average neighborhood watch? If you look at, there's 135, if you look at one neighborhood watch, what is the average number of members in that? Because I want to work it out. What can they actually, because 10,000 rand, I just want to hear, is that per annum? That's per annum. So that's actually nothing.
The approval we got from Cabinet is that we'll make two transfers per annum. The first one was then the 10,000, but the second transfer payment, sir, will then also be according to the size of the neighborhood watch. You see, what we don't want to do through the payment is we don't want to encourage the neighborhood watches to fragment in many small ones so that each of them get the same amount, if you understand what I'm saying. So the second payment is then being quantified now, and that will then be based on the size of the neighborhood watch. But the initial payment we've made now, to be specific to your question, sir, 10,000 Rand per neighborhood watch, and that was then, as we said, because in terms of Section 6 of the Community Safety Act, for a neighborhood watch now to be regarded as functional, they have to perform certain functions, like have a bank account. Now, in order for a poor community to have a bank account, it's cost. That's why we gave the initial money to be enable them then to comply with the requirements of Section 6, and subsequent payments will then depend on compliance and the size. But Chair, through the Minister as well, I'm sure that when we finalize that funding model for subsequent payments, we'll bring it to this committee for consultation as well.
But also, actually, if I can add to that, Chair, I mean, the 10,000 Rand is not to say, well, so there's two people that belong to the neighborhood watch, one, and they're each going to get 5,000 Rand. That's what it's for. It's for enabling the neighborhood watch. We've got neighborhood watches that have got control rooms, that have got body cams, cameras, they've got all sorts of things, and you've got other neighborhood watches that don't even have torches properly. You know, and this is about just getting that basis right, that a neighborhood watch has got a, I mean, 10,000 is nothing, but it enables them. They set up their bank account, they can actually get their house in order, and then you can start growing from there. Because we've got to get neighborhood watches into these are volunteers, and we've got to look after them. They're special people. When you meet these volunteers, they're doing an amazing job. They're walking in the middle of the night in a really, very, you know, tough community, and half of them, or most of them, are women, and they're trying to keep society safe. So we've also got to show them that we can, we support, and, you know, what do they need? Do they need airtime? Do they need, you know, what do they need to be able to actually do their job? And that's just to get them going. That's what I think the HOG answered the rest. I'm just trying to check, the Honourable Lekker asked about a copy of that initial letter. I'm sure you've got a copy of that initial letter. I'll make sure that I actually handed all of those letters to the President. I'll get a pack made up of this happening and I'll send that to the committee. Then, Honourable Lackey, you asked the question about specifically that chop shop and the relationship between us and the city. And yes, I obviously meet with the city. We have engagement. And I would like you to please just send me a copy of what you sent before, and I will personally engage with the city and find out why they haven't done anything about that specific chop shop. The second thing is on the hotspot in Younger, and obviously as an oversight role, I'll do exactly the same thing. I will check on the camera system, and the new camera systems are actually not fixed, and they're only stuck in one space. They can go anywhere. When we were at the launch of the control room in Lavender Hill, Steenberg, the station commander there showed us how that camera can actually zoom in. It's got a huge range. It can really focus on all sorts of things. So we need to also find out that specifically that camera that you're asking about, whether there's a chance that can even be updated if it is a problem. But also what we're doing is we're getting smarter and smarter how we're linking not only our own cameras or the city cameras, we're linking neighborhood watch cameras, we're linking all sorts of things. In the provincial traffic space, there's already 2,400 cameras connected and linked. And so we can also check on that specific hotspot space. But if it is also a hotspot that's not being dealt with properly, we will engage again with Becky, when I engage with the PC and ask SAPS also what's happening in this area. It's been raised out of the standing committee, and if you want, I'll also write a letter to the minister and say this is an area that I think I'll first engage with General Jula and say it's an issue that's raised from the honourable member. And then actually, I'm not sure this. That's the point on also asking the question on resilience and safety, and the, coming back to the program run by the NGOs and the religious community. I mean, today engaging with them, and I'm sure I hear about the number and the quantum, but the HODC is a partnership, and but I didn't have any complaints today, and I mean, it really looked like their program was making a difference and helping. But of course, that's also your job as oversight, and maybe meet some of those churches and meet some of those NGOs and ask them. So that's part of my job, and I also have met with some of the religious fraternity. And I mean, I know one of the questions I got in Delft was that some of those programs were run by NGOs, maybe not from Delft. But then I said to them, to make sure that the Delft fraternity are actually applying now. So when this window's open, that we actually get people in those areas to make sure that those churches and those NGOs are making application. And
I think it's just the one question still on the CPS. Why are we asking them to pay back the 2,500? So that's a requirement of Section 38 of the Public Finance Management Act. And the Auditor Generals are in, the Inland General is increasingly looking at transfer payments. So with the, what we do with the CPFs is at the beginning of the year we afford them this opportunity to sign the transfer payment agreement. If they sign the agreement, they get the 2,500, but then they basically agree that they'll submit the reports. If they then don't submit the reports, they are in breach of an agreement, and we have to either get the reports or they must pay back the money as required by the Auditor General. So it is really, it's also a pity, Chair, through you, that because Nyanga was last year, the year 2017, was one of the top reforming CPFs, and this year they've almost received nothing. So there is a bit of a relationship break, or you understand, but we know about it and we need to fix it, because it's one of those CPFs that actually desperately need to be functional. We are in advanced stage, and I'll ask Advocate Pillay to report on that as well, but we are in advanced stage also to negotiate with police and national to have a protocol in place that if a CPF is not functional, then how do we determine, how do we take it forward? Because the level of dysfunctionality of CPFs, especially in our 10 murder stations, is probably as high as 60%.
Just add on some of the issues. The YSRC evaluation, as far as I can recall, the evaluation report was sent to the standing committee, but we can ensure that it is resent as well. In terms of the issue of the CPFs and the chrysalis graduates being placed at the CPFs, we as the department prioritize the CPFs as a placement institution for chrysalis graduates. Unfortunately, initially the uptake was quite good, because it would require the CPF to sign the MOU with the department for the placement of the graduate. But it was not sustainable from the side of the CPF, because the chrysalis graduate is there during office hours. Many of the CPF members are there after hours. So the support and the supervision and the mentorship was actually lacking. And also the CPF found accommodation to be a challenge, because they had to then have space for the graduates. Very often SAPS would assist, but it wasn't sustainable that space was available at all times. So we are still open to the CPFs who want to have chrysalis graduates to assist them with the EPP and the completion of the report, but obviously in terms of our supervision and the monitoring that also takes place from chrysalis as well as the department, we have to ensure that it is the best placement for the chrysalis youth. However, as I said, we will prioritize them. There are currently over 118 CPFs that are submitting our EPP reports to the department, and the department has funded to date over 2 million towards the CPF.
Thank you. Members, can we move to the next section, Outlook, Reprioritization and Procurement? So that's page 150 to 133. Any questions? 130 to 133.
First, let me actually welcome the Equitable Chair. but I want to check, Chairperson, why was the budget decreased on the civilian oversight, and which sub-programs are likely to be affected in that regard? That's page 36, Chair. And also,
wait, hold on. We're on page 130 to 133.
Oh,
any questions on 130 to 133? Then we'll move on. We'll then move to receipts and financing, page 134 to 135. If I could just pose a question, I know that the total receipts increased by 17 million. I think that's wonderful to have, or good news to have additional funding. Could we just understand where the funding is coming from and what makes up that 17 million? Are there other questions on 134, 135?
And I think, again, in understanding that question, if we look at the column, the main appropriation for 2018-2019, you'll see that last year the total was 316. Then during the adjustment budget, it was already pushed up to 342. And this year, then it's further pushed up to almost 360, which give us a total additional allocation of 42 million rand. Now you'll also see that under the let's say grants sector specific, so we've lost a conditional grant from National despite the fact that our Chrysalis EPWP was outperforming. We met all the targets. Our budget conditional grant from National was cut from 7.9 to 3.9 million. But then the 7.4 million that you see there in the provincial revenue fund, that is then including 6.2 million rand that we over collected on the liquor licenses. So this year already, as we sit here, there's another over collection, I'm told, of about 5 million. The CFO confirms about that amount. So, Chairperson, we are confident now looking at the over-collection of revenue over the last 2 years that we will then be speaking that we'll increase the revenue by a similar amount, which will then add another about 6 million to that amount.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. We then move on to page by page, 136. Well,
the decrease that is there under the civilian oversight, what are the sub-programs that are likely to be affected?
Any other questions on 136?
Chairperson, that this decrease, firstly, again, if I may ask the patience of the members, if you look at the appropriation for the year was 74,000, which then went up to 85,000, which included the revenue retained from the liquor licenses. So it's actually when you compare this year to last year and you discount the appropriation, it's actually gone up by 2 million. But coming back to more specific the question, ma'am, the reason you're seeing that budget is being cleaned up, it's because it is increasingly aligned with National. So all the functions, for instance, the Ombudsman, the YSRP, that is not part of the National Secretariat targets and so on, and that is now under Program 3. So we are cleaning up that, but if you look at that drop in the budget, the two main contributors, as I said, is the liquor license retaining, and then the conditional grant of about 4 million rand, 3.6 that we lost.
Page 141. Page 141, my question is on the program support, the policy and research, and also the monitoring evaluation. I see there is a decrease Now my question is, what are the reasons for those decrees? And will those decrees not have any implication for the work of the department? And then my other question on page 141 is the safety promotion. On safety promotion on the APP, page 17, the last paragraph, it says that there are 279 murdered children in the province. It seems as if, and also the women is the highest in the Western Cape province. Now my question is on page 50 again, paragraph 9, it says the sub-program safety promotion will focus on the implementation of safety promotion programs with an emphasis on youth, women and children. Now my question is on this decrease. Why is there a 14.58 decrease? But in the APP page 17 and page 15, it's talking another thing, but the blue book has a decrease. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to start by saying earlier on I asked a question on which CPFs have Chrysalis graduate deployed to and what are those CPFs. I did not get an answer to that. Hopefully I'll get the answer in writing. The second question that I would like to raise a question on, particularly Chair, is around the issues of research. To what extent does the department have with institutions of higher learning in terms of understanding the role of communities in ensuring that the partnership that they had with the department is a partnership that will seek to address issues of social ills, and that communities will be able to raise awareness and build their capacity in responding to safety concerns. And with that, Chair, I want to get an understanding also as to how far is the department with the relationship on areas on the alcohol harm reduction. How far is the process? And out of the engagements of the department and the Department of Community Health, Department of Health, I want to believe that 60% of the cases that hospital attend to are as a result of personal violence, are as a result of liquor, substance abuse in the form of liquor. And in that case, what are the researchers saying? What are the causes, and what exactly the department is doing around ensuring that communities are aware of the dangers of alcohol? So I basically want to understand how far is the program and the relationship of the department with those communities. They cited Pal East, Town 2, Harare, Mynenberg, and Hanover Park. And what about other areas? Because in Nyanga alone, there's plus minus 300 shipments. So why not Nyanga? Why not Langa? Why not Kukuletu? Where there's informal settlement, you'll find more than seven liquor spots. If you go to Ramaphosa in Philippi, there's already three liquor spots that are there. So what exactly, what are the benefits of the alcohol harm reduction? Thank you.
Chair, let me also ask Advocate Pillay maybe just to respond on some of the detail. Let me take the last question first on the alcohol harms reduction. As you'll see on the budget, that's also why Program 2 has reduced and Program 3 has increased. The game changers are not going to be funded in the outer year. We've not received funding specifically. But what we'll do is we are now institutionalizing many of the lessons that we've learned. So let me just give an example, Chair, and maybe it also speaks to the question of research, and I'm mindful of your time. I don't want to over-answer. But the lessons we've learned in Town 2 on the Shabins, part of the problem is then the absolute barrier that exists to traders in informal areas to have any form of license. So they are forced to be illegal. And we even had consultants trying to help the Shabins to get land use departures, and it is so difficult that it becomes almost impossible. So therefore we have received the mandate to reconsider and rewrite the Western Cape Liquor Act, so that we can look at those barriers that exist to legal trading and how do we fix it. Again, on the sub-distribution, we can go on. All that I can maybe say is that we fully agree with the Honourable Member's assessment. It's absolutely correct in terms of the impact of alcohol, contributing for as many as 60% of domestic violence and violent crime. And as a result, we are working closely with the police, and key to that will be the review of the Liquor Act. We have strengthened the Liquor Authority. Mr. George can maybe also add to the detail of the programs being run and made available to bring people to the awareness amongst them. But the key that, Chair, that we really sit with, that's a serious problem here, is the inefficiency of our policing strategy. And let me expand a bit more. If I use the example, on a Friday evening, the police will send two vans into an area like Nyanga or Khayelitsha. They'll raid the Shabin, they'll collect the alcohol, they'll take it to the storeroom behind the airport, and on the Wednesday the person will pay a 200 rand admission of guilt and he'll get his alcohol back. Now that is so demoralizing for the police, and it makes a joke of the whole effort. So we have been in contact with DEFCOM through Advocate Isha Mohammed. We've received a 13-page legal opinion from the Chief State Law Advisor, and the bottom line is that we need to urgently amend the Western Cape Liquor Act in order to fill that gap, because according to our information and research, we're the only province where this is happening, and maybe that is also the reason why we are battling with violence. Until we can have that matter resolved, we are going to sit with the problem we have. Thank you, Chair.
142. Can I just check with Mr. Simeon George if in relation to this thing, is there any possibility that in terms of his entity, issues of monies that are charged on the distributors can be increased in terms of the distributors selling alcohol to people that don't have license?
Are there any other final questions in on 141?
Chairperson, yes. As far as the enforcement is concerned, I mean, and a lot of the activity around the game changer has been to up the capacity around enforcement issues around that pertaining to whether traders that are licensed, of course, are trading in terms of their licenses. And secondly, as far as the major distributors are concerned, there are specific provisions within that act that speaks to what the national legislation is around the major distributors within and manufacturers of their compliance in relation to that. With regard to the capacity traditionally around the Western Cape, you'll find that if you look at the numbers that we have as an entity, those are considerably low. And the HOD has made it quite clear going forward we will be looking at capacity beyond the game changes, because right now the increased capacity has been in respect of the game changes to do law enforcement in those areas. But the revisiting of the Act also will speak towards allowing us and enabling us to develop capacity for that. And the funding model going forward will probably also address that, because then if legislation allows us, then certainly the capacity to enforce would then also be a generator, would ensure that the budget for the legal authority would be appropriately developed going forward. A lot of changes in the pipeline. First of all, the legislation will speak, I think primarily Amber will speak to the harms of alcohol. And if that is so, then certainly the regulations will also support that.
Thank you. Page 142.
Chairperson, on the 147, 8.4 provincial security operation, I just want to need clarity. Why there's a decrease on the provincial security operation? Thank you.
Any other questions?
Chairperson, through you, that is then due to the strategic resourcing, the envisaged use of technology. We'll shortly, Chair, and I think within the next 2 months or so, you'll see that at the bottom there will be kiosks where you can, when you have visitors, similar to when you go to the airport, instead of standing at the counter to book in, you can now send a notice to your visitor via phone, and the person will be able, and he'll come and he'll book himself into the building through the use of the kiosk in this building. So we're going to launch it here, Jay, and then also with the strategic sourcing agreement with the provincial treasury, we have actually been able to increase, I think, quality, but decreasing cost. I think it was 16,000, David, per unit before. It's now 14,000. Yeah, that's the figures.
Members, I'm then going to table the annexures in their totality, so that's page 151 to 164. If you have any questions, if you just indicate on which page you have questions. Any question on the annexure? And so please then a question on the budget preparation. I just would like to then ask the representatives from the Western Ethical Party if you have any inputs or would like to make any comments.
Maybe just in relation to what I've just said, I mean, it's an interesting and challenging time going forward for the legal authority. The model for funding, for instance, is going to be one. We are quite eager to see amendments being made to the regulations and the Act to expedite processes applicable to licensing, of course, and then also to police the environment much more effectively, both from a distribution point of view, but also being responsive to complaints and that direct the policing of that particular environment and the compliance issues. The HOD has previously mentioned in relation to the zoning issues. Those are very pertinent as well in complicating this environment. Hopefully that will be addressed. But also already now some local authorities are looking at ways in which to address the issue around zoning. Speaking about a zoning overlay, for instance, that will allow for certain things to be happening. The process of hindering certain applications now are considerable, of course, and I think we need to expedite those. Thank you.
Any comments from the
Ombudsman?
Any are there any members of the public that at this point like to make submissions or pose any questions to the department?
purposes, I'll get my office to provide the committee with the letters that we've sent to the President and to the Minister. The second thing is the Honourable Lacker will, if you could just let me know the issues around the chop shop, and I'll follow that up with the city. I don't know if you've sent that in an email form or anything like that.
No, I actually raised those issues
with
the Minister.
Okay, I'll follow up on that with the city. You can just give me that detail. What I will also do on the Nyanga hotspot, I'll follow up with General Jula as well as the city on what their plans are on that hotspot. And then the last one is the CPF's Christmas students that have been assigned to put in a list of that for you.
On that note, I'd like to thank you for
No.